From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines and a little bit of Bigfoot. Here's what's happening. A research dossier compiled by the so-called Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance states that China intentionally hid or destroyed evidence of coronavirus outbreaks, resulting in the loss of tens of thousands of lives around the world. The 15-page document from the intelligence agencies of the United States, Canada, the UK, Australia, and New Zealand was obtained by a newspaper in Australia and states that China's secrecy amounted to an assault on international transparency. The coronavirus pandemic is likely to last, they say, as long as 2 years and won't be controlled until about two-thirds of the world's population is immune, according to a group of experts. Because of its ability to spread from people who don't appear to be ill, the virus may be harder to control than the flu, the cause of most pandemics in recent history. Kroger has confirmed that the supermarket chain will be putting purchase limits on fresh pork products and ground beef at selected stores. A spokesperson for Kroger's confirmed that the chain is putting purchase limits on ground beef, fresh pork at select locations. They don't want to run on all the food. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has granted authorization to Gilead Sciences for emergency use of an experimental antiviral drug, Remdesivir, to treat patients with COVID-19, it said in a letter to Gilead. In addition to that, of course, some people have been using the anti-malaria drug HCC as well, and that shows some interesting, promising results too. Dr. Jerome Corsi, Corsi Nation, with us for his weekly report on the coronavirus. Jerry, where do we stand with it this week? It's so confusing.
Well, I think, George, the virus has largely peaked. And it seems to worldwide have had about a 6 to 8 week cycle. I mean, these viruses and pandemics in the history of back to 2,000 years, none of them have ever killed everybody. And so they tend to extinguish themselves after a while, regardless what people do. And I think this virus is not dissimilar. I think it was greatly exaggerated. The vast majority of people who get COVID-19 don't even know they have it, or it's very, very minor. The mortality is less than 1% worldwide, and it seems to affect mostly those in older or with comorbidity, other conditions like obesity or diabetes. And I'm in New Jersey, and a lot of the deaths are actually in nursing homes.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of people are getting antsy too, Jerry. I'm noticing more and more cars on the road as opposed to a couple weeks ago. How about you?
Well, yes, I think even here in New Jersey. Of course, I've been locked up, as it were. We've actually...
Don't use that word with you anymore.
I know, George. That's a hot one with me. But I've beaten the Department of Justice every time they've come after me, so it's okay. And I'm still out here doing what I want to do. And the point is, you've got a situation where I think that the people need to get out. The country, take a look at Sweden, where they went for the herd immunity. They didn't really shut the country down, and they didn't suffer the economic consequences. I'm not sure we don't have more problems with the economic consequences, and I'm concerned about the increase in government powers. Some of these governors, including the governors in California or New Jersey and other states, seem to be power-hungry and disrespecting the Constitution.
Absolutely. Jerry, last week you announced that you've created something to give people the opportunity to talk to doctors via their computers. Tell us, how's that going?
It's going extremely well. I think we've really found a new market. On CorsiNation.com, the TeleMD program, and now we're expanding it to enroll doctors who want to use it for their own patients. I mean, we're finding first responders and others in this COVID crisis are wanting a variety of meds, and we're able to provide them through a pharmacy that, even when there's a blockage in, you know, in the state from a particular med, that's been the problem with some of the meds you've mentioned, but we're able to supply them legally. And I think it's a strong market even after COVID-19, because a lot of people, including older people don't want to leave home to go to see a doctor or to get their meds. And for under $200, you can have a legitimate visit with a MD, and the MD, you know, will prescribe the meds, and they'll come to you through a pharmacy to your door next day. We've been able to do this for under $200 for the whole deal, including the special delivery.
If they need to see the doctor again on the computer, can they do that?
They can come back to the same doctor on the MD program, the tele-MD. First of all, it's not a program to sell drugs. It is a program to sell an interview with an MD, and we're only prescribing drugs by the MDs. I'm a political scientist. I don't prescribe any drugs. I market this service. And you'll have to go through an MD who agrees that the prescription, whatever it is something you need and is okay for you to take. With that prescription, the pharmacy will fill the prescription and send it. The pharmacy operates anywhere in the United States, so it will send you the meds next day by special delivery if you want to pay for that.
You can find more information at CoursiNation.com. Let's just hope with the warmer weather, Jerry, that this pandemic dies down, literally. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has introduced a long-promised ban on assault-style weapons following the country's worst gun massacre in April. New rules would make it illegal to sell, transport, import, or use 1,500 varieties of assault weapons. The ban is effective immediately, but there will be a 2-year amnesty period for law-abiding gun owners to comply. Mr. Trudeau also said that he would introduce legislation, which has yet to pass, to offer a buyback program. Unlike the U.S., gun ownership is not enshrined in Canada's constitution, but gun ownership is still popular, especially in rural parts of the country. Mr. Trudeau made a point of saying that most gun owners are law-abiding citizens, but argued that assault weapons serve no beneficial purpose. The call to ban assault weapons was heightened after a number of high-profile shootings back in 2017, a mosque in Quebec, in 2018, a commercial street in Toronto, and most recently, a rampage across the province of Nova Scotia, where 22 people died, the deadliest shooting in Canada's history. North Korean state media has claimed that the country's dictator, Kim Jong-un, is alive and well, made his first public appearance in 20 days amid a fury of speculation about his health. As a matter of fact, a defector from North Korea said that he was dead. Nope, apparently not. He popped up. He was last seen April 11th, but he popped up today. A great story we have in our carousel reel at coasttocoastam.com. NASA's Hubble Space Telescope has captured incredible images of a comet's disintegration. It's falling apart. Go take a look at that story. Peter Davenport's with the National UFO Reporting Center, and he's here with his weekly report. And Peter, I want to ask you quickly, we've been getting a lot of reports of a series of stringed UFOs in the sky, but that's Elon Musk's series of satellites. Are you getting calls on that too?
About 2,000, George. Thank you for asking. I'd like to just share with the Coast audience the fact that they should go out some night and just look at these things. They can very soon they'll be able to see a video on YouTube linked to from my homepage at ufocenter.com. But I've been deluged about somewhere between 50% and 80% of all the calls are about those confounded satellites. I'm going to have to talk to Elon about this.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's been very busy. Just shipped down about 300 reports to my webmaster for posting, with about 1,300, 1,400 almost to go before we get caught up. I've been just deluged with calls. But I'd like to share just four cases with our audience tonight. The first one comes from the celebrated location of Gulf Breeze, Florida, where there were a series of very complex UFO-related events that took place back in beginning in November of 1987. But a young woman writes that on the 16th of April, she was out, I think, on the beach, although she doesn't say that specifically, admiring a clear blue sky with broken clouds, and she saw a silver sphere streak across the sky. Captured her attention immediately. She implies that it was streaking through broken clouds, but to her great amazement, it suddenly took a sudden left-hand turn, accelerated, and just disappeared from her sight in a matter of a few seconds. Whole event lasted, she says, about 8 or 10 seconds. The next case I'd like to share with our audience comes from up north a ways from Gulf Breeze in Granite Quarry, North Carolina, just northeast of Charlotte. Tuesday of this week, the 28th of April, a gentleman with whom I spoke this very morning reports that he was driving south on Highway 52 in the close to the town of Granite Quarry when his attention was drawn to a very shiny object off to his left, captured his attention, and George, while he was looking at it, he asserts that a dark, fuzzy, dark black object rose out of the top of it. It stabilized in a second or two, and then suddenly accelerated and shot up in the sky at a blistering pace, after which the silver or white object that the black object had come out of the top of suddenly shot off at a different direction. Very, very convincing report, and the gentleman is an excellent witness. Third case I'd like to share comes from Central Point, Oregon, just north of Medford in the southwest corner. It's on the I-5 corridor. A woman reports that this morning at 4 a.m. she was driving somewhere in Central Point, and her attention was drawn to a very bright object streaking across the sky. The interesting aspect of her sighting is that the center part of the object was round, and it gave off sort of a prismatic effect, different shade colors coming from the center of it, and it had two swept back rods or poles or something. It's a very interesting report. So I'm being flooded with good reports, and just a comment to our audience, if they've ever seen a UFO at any time in their life, no matter whether 6 seconds ago or 6 decades ago, I'd be grateful if they'd take a few minutes to record the information and submit it to the National UFO Reporting Center.
Peter's website, of course, is ufocenter.com. And I know, Peter, you fund this yourself. And I would love everybody, if they can afford it, to send you $1. Everybody listening tonight, can you give us that address?
Yeah, it's P.O. Box 700, Davenport, Washington, 99122. And thank you for mentioning that, George. We're going to put a contribution button on our homepage sometime soon. And if people would like to help us collect this information and get it out, I would be most grateful. And I'm going to save the fourth report for next week.
Great. And Davenport, Washington, is that named after you by any chance?
I tried to convince people it was, George, but I haven't had any success yet.
Thanks a bunch, Peter. We'll talk to you next week. In a moment, Strange Things in the Woods. Steve Stockton joins us. Get ready for a little spooky stuff next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you a little bit about our special guest tonight. Steve Stockton is a veteran outdoorsman, author, has been investigating the unexplained for more than 35 years. Originally from the mountains of East Tennessee, Steve has traveled all over the country in many parts of the world, now makes his home in Portland, Oregon, near the wilds and the Bigfoot country of the Pacific Northwest. Steve cites as his influences his gypsy witch grandmother, who told him of multitudes of legends and stories as a small child, and several authors that include our guests, Lauren Coleman and Nick Redfern. Steve, welcome to the program. I'm looking forward to this. What an amazing series of books you've written.
Well, thanks, George. Happy to be here.
Strange Things in the Woods. What's going on in the woods, Stephen?
Oh, man, all kinds of stuff. All the weird things. Strange things in the woods, in fact.
How did you get interested in things in the woods, the creatures in the woods?
Well, when I was a kid, I was a late in life, unexpected baby. My parents had me when they were in their 40s. So anytime they would go to visit their friends, there wouldn't be anybody my age there. So I would always listen to the old folks tell their stories, and a lot of times try to get them to tell stories just for the fact of listening to them. And I found that over the years, that a lot of the stories I heard, that the woods were a common theme. I've got lots of stories, things that didn't happen in the woods, but so that was just a good theme to go with for this book, I thought. And there's something out there. Don't know what it is. There's a strangeness. Just about any deep woods you get into, you can feel it sometimes. There are places out there that just don't feel right. They feel off.
UFOs got me when I was younger in an out-of-body experience at 11, Steve, and after that I was hooked. I had to investigate UFOs and phenomena and everything else, and it hasn't stopped. And look at where I am now, still doing this, and being able to talk to great guests like you about some of the things that that are out there. Let's talk about the woods in general. You know, a lot of people, you know, I was a Boy Scout. I used to go camping in the woods. Really never thought of anything scary or spooky in the woods, but it's a strange place. I mean, a lot of people hear strange howls and noises, and, you know, when you talk about Bigfoot and other creatures, who knows what's going on out there? It is fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's kind of inexplicable. I think a lot of it has to do with just the sheer magnitude of true wilderness. When you get out there and you realize just how small and infinitesimal you are compared to this vast expanse, that it really puts you in your place. And there's things out there that we don't know all about and maybe don't have explanations for.
We're going to talk with you about a lot of cases, and next hour we'll take phone calls with our amazing listeners for you. We have a guest that comes on the program, Steve. I'm sure you've heard of him, David Politis, who has written a book called Missing 411 about people who are just vanishing in our state and federal park systems. They're just gone, and nobody knows where they are. You have mentioned a case of a Dennis Martin. Tell me about that.
Oh, gosh, that was the first missing person case that I ever really got into. I was about the same age as Dennis Martin when that happened, 1969. He was about a year older than me. I think he was 6 when he went missing, so I would have been around 5. And I lived not too far from the Smoky Mountains, and it was Father's Day, 1969. He was there with his father and grandfather and I think a brother, and they were playing in an area, Cades Cove, called Spence Field, there in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. And the boys were either playing hide-and-seek or scare the parents or whatever you want to call it. There was another family that they had met there that also happened to be named the Martins, which there's a lot of almost Fordian things to this case. Well, Dennis's father observed him go behind a bush to hide, and then a few minutes later, the other boys were all back, no sign of Dennis. He walks directly to the bush where he saw Dennis go behind, nothing there. Walks around it a couple times, goes into the thicket, nothing there. And that was the last time that he ever saw Dennis, was when he stepped around behind that bush. Totally disappeared, left no trace, no clues. At that time, it was the biggest manhunt the Great Smoky Mountains National Park had ever had. The Green Berets helped out, the FBI helped out. Hundreds of civilian searchers and National Park Forestry Service workers, no trace.
Ever?
Ever.
Jeez.
And to me, you know, my little 5-year-old mind, that just, how did that happen? You know, that was my first time to kind of wrap my head around that yeah, people can go missing, kids can go missing. And I thought, well, we only live about an hour or so away from the Smokies. You know, you're 5 years old, you don't think about an hour's driving distance. And I even went out on my bicycle and rode the country roads there where we were and looked for him.
That was pretty brave on your part, Steve. My gosh.
I wanted to find him. Every day I've watched the news, I've read the paper. Back then, Knoxville, Tennessee had 2 daily newspapers, the Knoxville Journal, which was the morning paper, and the Knoxville News Sentinel, which was the evening paper. Every day I'd look at the papers, and I kept a scrapbook of clippings about that case, and it always haunted me, always stayed with me, and to this day, he's been missing over 50 years now, and absolutely no clue.
What a horrible thing for the parents to have to go through, Steve.
Yeah. His dad passed away on Halloween, no less, a couple years ago, and it just, you know, it's that long to have absolutely no closure. It just, it had to be.
Yeah, that's the worst, just not knowing. Steve, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. Steve has a couple of YouTube channels, by the way, which we've got linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Go take a look at that. We're talking about some of his works, including Strange Things in the Woods. And we'll be back in a moment to talk with Steve Stockton about his work, Strange Things in the Woods. We'll take calls with Steve next hour, then later on tonight, those open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Have you been up to the coasttocoastam.com website? You should be there every day looking at all the incredible stories and guests and things like that. And there's a section there called In Coast You Missed It, put on by our editor of Coast to Coast, Tim Banal, and he's got some great stories for us. Tim, always a pleasure, my friend. How are you hunkering down? Everything okay?
We're doing well here in Boston, George. We're hunkered down, riding out the storm as best we can.
Great. Good for you. Tell us about this week's great stories.
We got a couple of really interesting stories for the Coast listeners up at the website. In the number three spot, this one was really interesting. Now, I know you've been talking about this a lot, the Pentagon release of the UFO earlier this week. What's fascinating and really intriguing to me is an interesting development that happened outside of America, all the way over in Japan, in response to the Pentagon file release. The Minister of Defense in Japan, Taro Kono, told the press on Tuesday, following the release of the Pentagon videos, that the Japanese armed forces are working on developing a plan to establish procedures in the event an encounter is made with a UFO, which is really remarkable that this release here in America had a ripple effect all the way out to Japan. He said if a video can be taken, if a report is possible, then they're going to collect these reports. So it's a very interesting development. I thought this was also an odd question. He was asked if he believed in UFOs, and of course, I think they mean of the alien variety, right?
Right, exactly.
He said that he does not, but then someone, a reporter asked him about supernatural or psychic phenomenon, and he said, that is a corporate secret.
I love it.
It's very strange.
Corporate secret.
Yeah, and then in the number two spot at the Coast to Coast AM website, folks, get up and take a look at this. It's very reminiscent of the creepy clowns.
Ooh, I hate clowns, Timmy. I hate clowns.
I know. Well, they've evolved, if you will. They've morphed, I think. I hope. I don't know. I hope not. But an individual in England has been roaming around his village dressed in a plague doctor costume.
Ooh.
And he's been doing this now for the last 2 weeks in the village of Hellesden. And wearing a long black coat, he's got the hat, and he's got that beaked mask, the infamous beaked plague doctor mask. And folks can get a look at him. There's a video of him walking along through the village. And somebody took a picture of him, posted it on Facebook for one of those community pages, and people are sort of debating now. Is it funny? Is it frightening? A lot of the residents kind of came down in that latter group, and the police are now in pursuit of the plague doctor. They're not going to arrest him or anything like that, but they want to have what they call words of advice about the implications of frightening the town. Because, you know, you don't know who you're going to run into if you're walking around in a plague costume, and much like if you're dressed as a clown. That could have a bad result. So good luck to that person roaming around the village dressed as a plague doctor.
Excellent. Love your work, Tim. Keep at it. Tim Banal, our news editor at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Steve Stockton with us, author of Strange Things in the Woods. He's also got a couple other books, including More Strange Things in the Woods, My Strange World, We Are All Children in the Wilderness of the Afterlife, and he's got a couple of YouTube channels linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Steve, tell me about those YouTube channels. What do you do on those?
Well, 13 Past Midnight, that's my main channel. I wanted to do a narration channel on YouTube, and I thought, well, I'll narrate some of my own stories. So I did that, and then I enjoyed it to the point that now I write stuff to narrate, and then that'll find its way into a book. So it's come full circle. And then I had a gentleman named Bill Melder who heard me doing that and kept leaving messages on my videos like, I really like your voice. I want to talk to you. And I hear that a lot. I get a lot of compliments on my voice. I don't like the sound of it.
You know, it sounds good to me.
An educated hillbilly, which is what I am. But I got back in contact with him. He has a channel called missing persons and mysteries. And he actually brought me on, hired me to narrate the channel. And then we found that we worked so well together. I'm also writing for the channel, and he brought me on as full partner. So all kinds of missing 411 type content on there. We delve into national parks, those disappearances, and then also the paranormal aspect of a lot of these places and cases. Did one recently on Mount Shasta in Northern California. What a weird place that is. And Bill had a personal experience with entities at Joshua Tree.
So yeah, I've been down there a lot. That's lots of strange things going on. Lots of people hear stories of cats, big cats in the woods, but you've got the story about ghost kittens or cats. What is that?
Well, that didn't happen in the woods. It happened at my house, the house that I grew up in. My father had it custom built. And one day I was laying on the floor of my bedroom reading a comic book, and I heard kittens, just very small kittens mewing. Sounded like several of them, two or three. And it was coming from under the house. Now, the house didn't have a basement. It was a rancher-style home, and just had a crawl space under there, which my dad kept padlocked just to keep anybody out of there, to keep any varmints out. So the next morning, I got a flashlight, a high-beam flashlight, went in there, unlocked it, went all through the crawl space. I mean, every inch of it. And back near the garage portion of the house, it was literally a crawl space. I had to belly crawl. Nothing. No cats, no kittens in there. And I heard that for years, George. It was always kittens. And, you know, if it had been kittens in there, they would grow up and eventually be cats. And I made several forays under the house. Could never locate the kittens. And I would even have friends over. I had another friend over once, and we were playing a board game, and he'd kind of stretched out on the floor, and he's like, "Man, you've got kittens under your house."
Whoa.
And no idea. The last night that I heard those, and I'd heard them from probably about the time I was 6, 7 years old. I was 15, and the last night I spent in that house, we'd already moved most of the furniture to the new house, and I spent the night there on the floor because my bed was already gone, and I fell asleep to the sound of kittens mewing under the house.
What do you think they were?
George, I can't tell you, other than, I mean, it was obviously kittens. It was some sort of kitten, but I think just like you can have spirits or ghosts or whatever you want to call it of people, you can have that of animals too. I've got some other stories about a favorite hunting dog of a fellow that passed away, and then it sort of came back. Everybody saw it except the guy that owned it. But they would see it like just going around the corner of the house or maybe at the edge of the woods. And then like go around the corner, no dog there. But it was a walker hound, a hunting dog, that very unmistakable markings, very unique, and have no idea. And I've had other people tell me about they've had pets that seem to be cats in particular, that after they passed away, they would feel them climb onto the bed at night or maybe brush up against their leg in the dark. So I think there's something beyond what we consider the normal.
Oh, yeah, sure is.
Supernatural world out there where things are different.
You've written about your grandmother being a gypsy witch. I'm sure your grandmother was a great woman. What's a gypsy witch?
Well, she was a self-proclaimed gypsy witch. That's what she called herself. She didn't follow any particular path. It was more of a Wiccan or a folk type thing, a lot of herbs and things like that. But she would be termed maybe a kitchen witch by today's vernacular, just use what was on hand. But she told fortunes. She read palms. She read tea leaves and coffee grounds. And she also practiced phrenology, which you can tell person's fortune and things like that by feeling the bumps and ridges on their skull, which it's kind of a lost art. It was popular back in Victorian times. And another thing you have to remember, all my grandparents, because my parents were so old, all my grandparents were born sometime in the 1800s. So these were people that, I mean, like what we're going through now, these are people that had gone through cholera, that had gone through the Spanish flu.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Two world wars, you know, and a lot of this without electricity or indoor plumbing, even some of the ones that lived in Appalachia. So you have to look back sometimes to see how tough people can really be and the survival skills that we do have, whether we realize it or not.
Did Grandma ever put curses on people or anything like that?
I never heard of her doing anything like that, to my knowledge. She would do more like charms and love, a lot of good luck stuff. She was heavily into that. And she looked like the typical witch. I was scared of her when I was little. She was kind of little and humped over and very, very small stature woman, very skinny. And the crooked nose and the crooked fingers. And I was scared to death of her. But later in life, I wish I hadn't been so scared of her and paid more attention, particularly with the folklore, superstitions. She had some kind of superstition for everything.
Sounds like she looked like the witch in The Wizard of Oz.
Very similar. Minus the peaked hat and put some little granny glasses on her.
Did she have a little cackle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she had a very eerie sounding cackle.
What got you to go from Tennessee, Steve, to Portland?
Well, I've lived in East Tennessee basically all my life. Both my parents passed away within 32 days of each other in 2003.
Geez. That must have been
rough. I wanted to get away for a little while and decided to travel. I went overseas for a year and kind of prowled around in Southeast Asia. Had a friend that I'd gone to college with that had moved to the Philippines. So I went and visited him and went to a lot of the other countries over there, got to see Vietnam and Thailand and all over, really. So that's the nice thing that once you're there in that area, it's really cheap to fly to other places and other countries. And then came back, and I just wasn't happy in Tennessee anymore. Went to Florida for a couple of years. Didn't really care for that. I worked in production for Disney Studios. I was a stage manager. So my neighbors were moving to Las Vegas and said, hey, you want to go? And my lease happened to be up at the end of that month. Went to Vegas and had a good time out there. But again, it wore on me after just a few years, the crowds and the traffic and just the constant go, go, go in Vegas.
Yeah.
And I missed the rain living in the desert and also missed being able to tell one season from the next. So I considered Seattle, I considered San Francisco, and then just kind of split the difference and went to Portland, didn't know anything about it, and actually love it here. I'm just outside of Portland. I'm out in the country. I'm about 25 minutes outside the city. And basically came here to write, and that's what I've done. It's a good place for it. I'm a hermit by choice, pretty much. I've been practicing this self-isolation for years. And just the writing life is just, it's a lonely, solitary life, but that's what a writer needs, just to be locked away in a room with a keyboard and your thoughts. And my work day, I write 4 hours a day and I read 4 hours a day. And as long as I keep that discipline, you know, the books are there, just getting them out.
A lot of Bigfoot stories on the Northwest.
Oh, yeah, this. From basically Northern California all the way up through Oregon and into Washington State. I've done a lot of prowling around there. I've never had a sighting. I've heard some of the tree knocks and the yips and the owls. Back east in the Jefferson National Forest near Damascus, Virginia, on the Appalachian Trail, I had stones thrown at me in the middle of the night from different directions.
Wow.
By something unseen. And I've described that to people, and they told me that they thought it was probably some sort of Bigfoot type cryptid or something, that I was somewhere I didn't need to be and kind of got gently tossed rocks at till I left.
What would you say, Stephen, is one of the strangest things in the woods?
One of the most unsettling to me, and I've had this happen throughout the country and in other spots in the world, but there's a time when you're certain places in the woods where everything will go absolutely still and quiet. I mean, it's like
You don't even hear the insects chirping or anything like
right.
that.
It's like something you're watching television and somebody turned the volume completely down. There's no birds, there's no sounds, there's no water, there's no wind in the trees. It's just deafeningly silent. And that, to me, that's very unsettling. I've had that happen more in the Smokies, Smoky Mountains in East Tennessee and North Carolina, but it's probably because I've been there more than I have anywhere else. I've hiked a lot of the Appalachian Trail, never through hiked it, but I've been on the trail in every state it goes to except for Maine.
For folks who want to send you emails and things, Steve, how do they find you? Because I don't have a website for you.
Oh, okay, yeah, I don't really have a website. The two YouTube channels I mentioned, I'm on Facebook, Steve Stockton 81. That's also my email address, stevestockton81@gmail.com. And I'm active on Twitter. Strange and Odd is my handle on there. I love hearing from fans and interacting with people. I've got so many people listening to me tonight. My friend Jimmy B. from Brainerd, New Jersey, he's beside himself because of
Well, let's tell Jimmy to call in because we're going to take calls with you in just a moment, Stephen. So let's get ready to do that. We're going to take phone calls next hour with Steve Stockton as we talk about his work, Strange Things in the Woods. And if you've ever been in the woods and saw anything strange, check in with us. One time, my son was in the woods, and he heard what he thought was Bigfoot running. You know, you would think it would be a deer or something. He said, no, Dad, this was like heavy and thunderous and running, not even like a bear. That's scary.